Very pleased to have with us today ADI and CEO Vincent Roche. Welcome, Vince.
Good afternoon.
We have Ali Husain in Investor Relations is with us today as well. So, much to talk about, a lot of focus on M&A, so I think we'll get that out of the way. Clearly, you guys coming off the Hittite deal, if you can talk about in the context of an industry that's starting to consolidate, like, why was Hittite the right deal for you, and what are the implications?
That's a good question, Craig. So Hittite for ADI was, in many ways, it checked all the boxes that we cared about. Number one, they developed technology with high barriers to entry. The kinds of places, the kinds of markets they addressed are highly sustainable, and the returns tend to be pretty good. So I think as well, you know, something that's probably underestimated in all these M&A deals is the complexity of integration. How do you integrate? The soft stuff is very, very hard to do. But we had spent a lot of time as a company really trying to understand the culture of Hittite, their leadership team, their engineering teams, how they thought about the world. And, you know, it was something, it was the biggest deal we'd ever done in the company's history. But, you know, it checked, I think, all the key boxes, you know, very, very well for ADI. And, you know, we're now, what, 8, 9 months into the acquisition, and I'd say we're ahead of where we thought we would be in terms of all the facets of integration. And I think for ADI, when we think about M&A, it's really a case of how much of what we're doing is about increasing the demand of the combined entities versus just looking for short-term operating synergies. So the former is much more important to me and to ADI. So we're looking for, you know, 5 years out, our customers are saying to us, "Boy, that was a really smart deal. I'm glad you did it. It's made everything better. Our innovation stream's better, and you're more valuable to us as a supplier." So that's our thesis for M&A, and that's kind of the, you know, those are the portals through which we will look for any activities in the future.
Got it. You know, sticking with Hittite, can you give any early-stage anecdotes or examples in terms of customer engagements or where you're starting to see that kind of come together? And granted, these are long design cycles, so revenue's a little further out, but just how the customer activity and the appetite has been for the combined entity.
Well, Hittite has been valuable to ADI on two fronts from a market perspective. The technology was very complementary. We, as a company, had been extending from our mixed signal heritage, moving from bits, if you like, into the very, very high-frequency RF and microwave areas. So we knew something about that space, but that was Hittite's domain, and they were trying to actually move more into the mixed signal area. So I would say the combination was very complementary, and their technology was very much targeted at markets that we care about. Communications infrastructure, for example, which is an important market for ADI, both in terms of the base station and the point-to-point activities as well, the backhaul activities, and also in the industrial area. You know, their business was 55-60% in communications and the remainder in applications like instrumentation, aerospace and defense. So I think what we've been able to do is very quickly extend Hittite's reach into the large communications infrastructure customers. Because to be a player there for the long term, you've got to have scale of technology. You've got to have scale of investment. You've got to have all the facets of supply chain and quality systems, all the things that big customers care very, very deeply about. So we've been able to bring that rather quickly to Hittite, and you know, one of our large customers was telling me a couple of weeks ago back in Massachusetts from the communications infrastructure area that they're thrilled that the combination has taken place because in many ways Hittite's lack of scale had caused them to reach their potential, whereas the combination of the two pieces gives us the opportunity to attack bigger problems in a more meaningful way in that communications infrastructure area. On the flip side, I'd say in the aerospace and defense space in particular, that was a focus area for Hittites. And in many ways, they've been able to deepen ADI's level of engagement in that area in a reasonably short period of time. I think the synergies as well on the channel side, you know, one of the attractive parts that we felt in terms of getting some immediate gains from the Hittite portfolio, they have, you know, 1,200 product SKUs, something like that, more than 1,000 anyway, being able to take that product catalog into the distribution channel and really fan Hittite out to the many tens of thousands of customers that we call long tail. That's working very, very well at this point in time as well. So I think it's captured the imagination of our biggest distributors.
Got it. Maybe just to close out the M&A kind of theme, and for your strategy, again, as you mentioned, revenue growth and longer-reaching goals you have. There's some other deals in the space that have been more consolidation or cost-cutting, so I know that's kind of not your angle. But that said, you know, there's a lot of talk about scale as the industry's matured, and, you know, what's your view of that in terms of, you know, how important is scale in the industry going forward?
Well, scale at some level is always important. When I look at ADI and what we do, I mean, what is this company at its essence? We've got the broadest range of technologies and the most expertise that we've built up over the last 50 years. We're in business now 50 years. We essentially sense and interpret the physical world. And to be able to do that, we have sensor technologies, we've data conversion technologies, linear technologies, we have DSPs, we have microcontrollers, we have algorithm technology, we have system expertise. So I think at least in that area, which I think is a very, very rich space for growth in the future, we're well positioned. We have plenty of scale in that area. I think when you start stepping out into the world of digital, you start moving into microcontrollers where, you know, software is a bigger and bigger piece of the game. The cost of scale in that space is very, very different to the cost of scale in the analog space, as an example. So I think at some level scale is always important, but I think you've got to be scaled beyond what you evaluate to be critical mass in whatever business you're trying to attack. So I think in the mixed signal business, we've got a very enviable position in many, many ways compared to our closest competitors.
Got it. I want to spend some time on the industrial market, your biggest market. And really the angle I'm looking for is when I think about autos, which is a theme that's also an important market, that's really resonated with investors in terms of dollar content. There are similar things happening in the industrial place, so I was hoping you can, you know, share with investors any examples from a content or technology that are really driving growth in industrial, what would be above and beyond a GDP-type environment.
Yeah, perhaps the biggest change in our industrial business in the last, I'd say, 5, maybe 7 years is that we have become much, much more market-focused as a company. Much more market-focused as a company. And what that's meant is that we've been engaging with the market leaders in areas like plant automation, instrumentation, and developing system-type approaches to solving critical applications problems in these spaces. And it's paying dividends for us. We've been able to connect the pieces of ADI into more complete solutions for these industrial customers. Sometimes we get the attention or we get the traction through ASSP developments, you know, developing application-specific products and pulling in the portfolio around the ASSPs. So I'd say in instrumentation, we talked on our earnings call a couple of weeks ago about the emergence of software-defined instrumentation, software-defined radios. So we're ahead of that theme as a company, enabling our customers to build complete, very high-frequency instrumentation platforms using our mixed-signal technology and the microwave and RF technologies that we have to be able to build rapidly and get to market fast and do the configuration of all these different systems very rapidly using software-defined instrumentation based on our transceiver technologies. We're working with one of the big commercial aircraft companies at the moment. We're helping them retool the entire communication system by bringing new ways of using our software-defined radio architectures, as an example, into that space. You know, when I talk with customers in the area of robotics, for example, or plant automation, you know, the problems they're trying to grapple with are increasing need for precision in controlling robots, taking power down, but also being able to instrument, being able to sense the machines and do predictive safety analysis, for example, or predictive service analysis on machines. So those are opportunities that we're starting to play in, using our MEMS technologies and using our great heritage in data conversion and linear technologies. You know, somebody was asking me earlier what has happened in terms of, you know, real-life applications where automation's taking place in the industrial area. You know, we have used our MEMS sensing technologies in terms of gyro, inertial sensing, to enable one of the big agricultural machinery companies to automate the farm, so to speak. So there are many, many applications where the breadth of our technology is allowing us to bring automation to new levels, to help our customers solve the energy problems they're dealing with, the precision problems, and also not just providing bit streams to our customers, but also using algorithmic technology to extract information, which is something that makes our solutions even more sticky and more attractive to our customers.
Got it. Maybe we can switch gears to the medical space, which is a segment within industrial. Any secular changes on the way there that you would highlight in terms of, you know, some of your growth drivers in medical?
Yeah, medical. You know, I was talking with the chief medical officer at one of the big hospitals in Boston recently, and I asked him, you know, of all the technologies we develop, what would be most relevant in the hospital environment? And he said, well, if you could solve the whole problem of untethered, reliable vital signs monitoring, that would be huge. Well, as it turns out, we are working with probably the biggest healthcare machine provider in the world today to redefine the way vital signs monitoring is delivered in the clinical environment. So, you know, in mission-critical applications where you're measuring wellness as well as health, you know. So I think that's an area where our photonic sensing technology, for example, our MEMS sensing technology is allowing us to create these new measurement systems that allow the measurement of blood pressure, non-invasive blood pressure, non-invasive pulse oximetry, and so on and so forth. That's an area where our technology is making a difference today, but I think it's still in the infancy. I think the whole automation and the wireless automation of healthcare and vital signs monitoring, it's really today a little bit better than a toy, but tomorrow is going to be a clinical grade level set of devices that can measure a huge number of conditions in the human body. So that's a particular example. We've also been leveraging our precision conversion technologies to partner with our photonics capability to allow ADI to bring very, very sensitive devices that can measure photons, essentially, and allow the makers of CAT scanners and MRI systems, you know, to use lower dosage X-ray systems, for example, to get good images of the human body. So that's another area where the precision of our technology and our ability to do the sensing is making a difference in healthcare. So one is big iron, the other is human body.
On the automotive side, you've had quite a five-year run in terms of growth. You know, more recently, it's slowed a bit. Can you just talk about maybe just the ebb and flow of automotive and probably most importantly, the opportunities you still see in front of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, what our customers in automotive tell us they want more and more. They want more safety. They want higher quality infotainment systems. They want more connectivity. They want more automation, more electrification of the car. So we really have three businesses in automotive. One is obviously safety, passive, active, and predictive. And one of the fastest growing parts of that entire space is in the radar application. It's in the advanced driver assistance application using radar technology. We're very, very pleased with the progress that we've made there. So I think that's going to be an ongoing, content gain for ADI in that system, because we're one of the only suppliers that can produce the MEMS sensors for active and passive safety as well as this predictive safety. So at some point in time, having a command of the entire system, safety system architecture, is going to matter. Another area that we've been investing to win in over the last number of years is in the powertrain. So battery sensing, for example, lead acid battery monitoring, sensing, monitoring control, electric cars, helping to manage the batteries there as well, but also extending the use of our technology into measuring the quality of fuel and oil, for example. So those are new applications. Several weeks ago, we announced the introduction of what we call the A to B bus. It's an internally generated media management bus technology that allows the car manufacturer to take out very, very heavy weight of wiring and be able to move media in a very, very noisy environment using our signal processing system. So, I think in general, car companies are making the transition from being mechanically oriented to being good at the mechanics, but really good at the IT as well. So I think it's a terrific growth opportunity in the future. And I was explaining to somebody earlier that we've been quite pleased. You know, our business really was centered around the car companies in Europe, but we've been very aggressively expanding our reach into Asia, and we've got a good position in America too. So I think on a geographic basis, I'm quite pleased with the growth we've been getting. And this is a business that has been growing at more than 20% compounded for 5 years. We mentioned on the earnings call a couple of weeks ago, just given some of the puts and takes, the ebbs and the flows, and some platforms, we think this year won't be as strong. I do believe it'll be a growth year, but that 16 and 17 will resume what I consider to be strong growth. And what I consider to be strong is growth at a level that's maybe 2-3 times the rate of vehicle unit growth. So I think it's a great space for innovation in the future. And there's more and more sensors being used, and every time there's a sensor used, there's a spot for ADI.
Got it. If we shift over to communications, particularly wireless infrastructure, can you touch on just the importance of content from one generation to the next, so from 3G to 4G, and then also maybe give investors a sense of just by geography how you see this year shaping up from a growth perspective in wireless infrastructure?
Yeah, you've got to be a bit of a soothsayer to figure out how the balance is going to shift geographically this year, but I think China is going to be strong. TD was really the big growth story last year, I think, for a lot of us in the wireless infrastructure market. And that will continue this year. It probably won't have the same kind of lumpiness to it, but it will be a steady build. As you know, the licenses for FDD have just been granted. So somewhere in the second half of this year, I think we'll start to see fairly aggressive deployment of FDD systems. So that's new to ADI. It's new to us all. So that will give us more footprint, basically. And in general, in systems like TDD, in systems like 4G, Every time we've moved from one generation to the next between 2G and 3G, 3G and 4G, we've tended to get maybe 20 or 30% more content per radio channel, you know, as that migration has taken place. So that's been the case in 4G for us across the globe. And so China will be strong this year. I think it'll have a good year. You know, if the Europeans can really think ahead and get beyond 2.5G, you know, my sense is Vodafone will continue to build out the infrastructure and try to get some lead in Europe this year, which will benefit us. And, you know, America continues to densify. So, but I think America will be, it'll be solid in terms of macro base station build-out. And, of course, every time you put more capacity in place on the radio interface, you've got to put more capacity on the backhaul as well. So the point-to-point system will benefit from the point-to-point build-outs as well. Something else that doesn't get talked about a lot in our communications business is the fact that we have a good business in building control systems for optical data chains as well. So we've good content there. It's a precision mixed signal opportunity for ADI. So as the need for capacity and the need for broadband data increases across the air, it'll help our base station business, and it will also help our backhaul business. Something else that is expected to hit this year is the small cell, that it is supposed to, in earnest, begin to move this year. I hope it's soon because we've great content across the globe in China, America, Europe. So the sooner it happens, the better.
Got it. Maybe last one before we open it up to investors for questions. The consumer piece has come down as a percent. You guys have really repositioned that portfolio, but it feels like it's kind of leveled off now. So can you talk about, now that it is at that level, you know, what are the growth prospects going forward, and, you know, are there particular niches you can still play in that space?
Yeah, it's a good question. So as you probably know, we've taken down, 6 or 7 years ago, ADI spend of total R&D in the consumer area was about 40% of total. It now runs about 10% thereabouts of our total spend. It's a bigger budget, but it's on a ratio basis much smaller. So our consumer business is really a tale of two different pieces. We have one piece, roughly half the business, which looks a lot like a B2B sector. It's what we call prosumer audio video. Lots of customers, lots of products. And the life cycles tend to be pretty long. So, you know, customers who supply multimedia systems to enterprises use a lot of our technology there for moving audio and video and interface products. The other part of the business is really portable-centered. So we have tried to use really our precision signal processing portfolio to work with the most innovative portable device companies on the planet to help them really figure out some tough problems to solve in things like, you know, measurement of position in space and time, time of flight type applications, optical image stabilization systems, for example, in some of these little devices here, where the problem's difficult and the results are really, really impactful. So we've scaled, I think we're well scaled in terms of R&D. I'm pleased with the position that we have in the sense that the headwind that we had for so many years, as we had divested our business, the headwind has largely abated. We've got some good content, some good wins in some of these portable applications in particular. And you've seen the results of that last quarter. And, you know, I think that will continue to be a good business for ADI.
Got it. Okay. With that, if there are any questions in the audience.
What's your exposure and your view about the Chinese wireless infrastructure business for next year?
For next year?
Yes.
I haven't a clue.
Okay.
I think it'll be good. I mean, actually, when you think about what's going on at a macro level in the business, you know, it's believed, all our big customers tell us roughly the same thing, that the capacity requirement, the data capacity requirement, needs to increase 1,000 times over the next 5 to 7 years. And if you look, for example, at 4G technology, today they consume the lion's share, 4G subscribers consume the lion's share of bandwidth, but yet it's only penetrated to less than 200 million subscribers. So there's a long, 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 long way to go. I think what you'll see is it's very, very hard to predict quarter by quarter, 6 months by 6 months, what's going to happen, what carriers are going to, you know, lay out the capex. But I think over the next 5 to 7 years, that's going to be a great business for the simple reason that modern economies operate on good internet and wireless connectivity. So I think that's the way you've got to view it. And from our standpoint, we've picked one part of wireless infrastructure. We've said, what we're doing, our mission is to build the best radio systems on the planet in conjunction with the market leaders in communications infrastructure. That's our business. It served us very well in the past, and I think it's going to be even better in the future. So I think you've got to take a long-term view.
They're going to bring you a mic.
In terms of the wireless infrastructure market, both in terms of the LTE, you know, base station business as well as the small cells, how should we think about what the lead times, normal lead times would be for those businesses? So, you know, when you talk about an improvement in China, what have you, how much visibility do you have at this current point in time?
Oof, it's a great question. I mean, those businesses now, the supply chains are so short. The visibility in terms of actual demand, very, very short. One of our big communications infrastructure customers was telling me they get sometimes 2 days lead time. So you've got to be very smart and very agile in terms of how you manage the supply chain. I think what we operate more on is, you know, again, taking a long-term view that we believe over a period of a year or 2 years that the business will be such and such a size. And we work very, very closely with our customers to try and, you know, lay in to get the balance, lay in demand and get the balance between supply and demand, you know, as accurately configured as we can. But we've done well. I mean, as a company, we are running, you know, better than 95% on time within a 6-week lead time for our customers. So across everything, and it's even better in communications infrastructure. Because the visibility is better.
Okay, we'll wrap up. Last question here.
Hey, Vince. Thanks for taking the question. Just curious, I mean, as part of the merger that was announced between NXPI and Freescale, you know, NXPI,
I knew somebody would ask this question, yes.
Well, maybe you could finish it for me. So, you know, the RFPA business is on the block for NXPI. I'm just kind of curious, you know, if that could potentially be a strategic asset that might be of interest to ADI and how that might fit in a portfolio that you have.
Yeah, I've had that question several times. You know probably as much as I do about that business right now. I mean, I've read the same and heard the same that you have. I don't know. I mean, on the surface, it looks like it's complementary to what we do. It's an analog technology. But I don't know. I mean, till, you know, somebody tells me that it's really important, maybe we take a look at it, but I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not on my radar screen at this point.
Okay. With that, we'll wrap up. Thanks so much, Vince, for your
time. Okay, thank you.